Have you ever wondered why you chose that particular shirt this morning? Or why you felt so strongly about a political candidate despite knowing little about their policies? Leonard Mlodinow's Subliminal offers a fascinating glimpse into the hidden forces that drive our behaviors, perceptions, and decisions. This New York Times bestseller has captivated readers worldwide, including celebrities like Daniel Kahneman, who called it a masterpiece, and Bill Gates, who featured it on his recommended reading list. The book's cultural impact extends beyond psychology enthusiasts, influencing business practices and personal development approaches by revealing how our unconscious minds shape nearly every aspect of our lives. As a physicist turned neuroscientist, Mlodinow brings a unique perspective to the exploration of our mental processes, combining rigorous scientific evidence with engaging storytelling that transforms complex neurological concepts into an intellectual adventure. Our unconscious mind drives far more of our behavior than we realize or care to admit. But this isn't Freud's hot and wet unconscious seething with repressed desires. The new unconscious emerges from our brain architecture that makes certain mental processes inaccessible to consciousness by design. This modern understanding reveals how our behaviors, judgments, and social interactions are driven by brain processes we cannot directly access. The unconscious isn't a defense mechanism, but an evolutionary gift crucial for survival, enabling quick responses to threats and social situations. We confidently believe we understand our own motivations, but research consistently proves we're often completely wrong. Consider how unconscious factors influence who we marry. People disproportionately marry others with similar names or initials. Or how environmental cues affect our eating habits. We consume more from larger containers, regardless of hunger, find food more appealing when described with sensory language, and judge recipes as more difficult when printed in complex fonts. Our brains operate through parallel modules working outside consciousness, making our judgments susceptible to surprising influences. Product packaging, background music, pricing, and countless other factors shape our decisions while we remain convinced of our rational decision-making. The most remarkable aspect isn't that these influences exist, but that we're so completely blind to them while maintaining absolute confidence in our self-knowledge. What feels like deliberate choice is often the unconscious mind presenting its conclusion to consciousness, which then constructs a rational-sounding explanation for a decision already made. This isn't a design flaw, but a feature. Our unconscious processes information at roughly 11 million bits per second, while consciousness handles a mere 50 bits. Without this division of labor, we'd be paralyzed by information overload. About a third of the human brain is devoted to visual processing, interpreting color, detecting edges and motion, perceiving depth, recognizing faces, yet we remain unaware of this complex work. Our unconscious handles these tasks and presents only the final interpretation to our conscious mind, creating what feels like direct access to reality, but is actually a carefully constructed model. The brain has specialized regions for specific tasks, like the fusiform face area dedicated to facial analysis. This specialization reflects the unique importance of faces in human communication, demonstrated by our ability to detect subtle distortions in right-side-up faces, but not in upside-down ones. In a remarkable case, a man called TN, blinded by strokes that destroyed his visual cortex, could correctly identify facial expressions and navigate around obstacles despite having no conscious awareness of seeing anything. This phenomenon, called blindsight, occurs when the unconscious visual system remains intact while the conscious visual system is damaged. Similar effects can be created in healthy subjects through binocular rivalry experiments, where people shown different images in each eye perceive only one image consciously while their unconscious processes the other. In one study, subjects shown erotic images matching their sexual preferences could unconsciously detect positions of figures they couldn't consciously see. Our brains constantly fill gaps in sensory information, compensating for imperfections in our perception. We have blind spots in vision that get filled in, poor peripheral vision that gets enhanced, and our eyes make rapid movements, saccades, that get edited out of our conscious experience. Similarly, our hearing automatically fills in missing sounds through phonemic restoration. We can hear complete words even when portions are masked by coughs. These unconscious processes create a seamless experience of reality, but what we perceive is actually an artificially constructed environment. Like scientific theories that model gravity, our brains create useful but approximate models of the world. The question becomes, if our unconscious fills in blanks to construct reality, how accurate is that picture, whether we're processing visual information or forming impressions of people we meet? In July 1984, Jennifer Thompson was raped by an intruder. After identifying Ronald Cotton in police lineups and in court, she celebrated his conviction with champagne. Years later, DNA testing proved another man, Bobby Poole, was the actual rapist. Despite Thompson being an ideal witness, bright, calm during the assault, deliberately studying her attacker's face, she identified the wrong man, highlighting the profound unreliability of eyewitness testimony. This isn't an isolated case. Police lineups revealed disturbing statistics. 20 to 25% of witnesses choose known innocents placed in lineups. When the true culprit isn't present, over half of eyewitnesses select someone anyway. The Innocence Project found that 75% of people exonerated by DNA testing were imprisoned due to inaccurate eyewitness identification. Even highly educated people with strong motivation to remember accurately fall victim to memory distortion. John Dean, Nixon's White House counsel involved in the Watergate cover-up, testified before the Senate with such detailed recall of conversations that he became known as the human tape recorder. However, when his testimony was compared to Nixon's secret recordings, researchers discovered Dean's recollections were wildly inaccurate. While Dean's testimony remains self-incriminating, the striking inaccuracy of specific details he recalled with certainty demonstrates how memory distortions affect everyone. Why are our memories so unreliable? The traditional view of memory as a storehouse of accurate recordings persisted until recently. German psychologist Hugo Munsterberg, who became Harvard's psychological laboratory director, investigated eyewitness reports after realizing his own testimony contained errors. His research established three key concepts. People remember the gist of events, but not details. When pressed for details, people unconsciously make things up. And people believe these fabricated memories. Our imperfect memory system survived evolution because it's good enough, sufficient for our ancestors to recognize dangers, food sources, and safe paths home. Perfect recall would overwhelm us with irrelevant data. The mind must sift through roughly 11 million bits of information per second to retain what matters. The famous case of Solomon Sharashevsky demonstrates this problem. He remembered everything in perfect detail, but struggled to recognize faces, seeing each expression as a new face, and understand language, focusing on exact words rather than meaning. Most people retain the gist of information while discarding specific details. We can remember deep structure, meaning, for long periods, but surface structure, exact wording, for only seconds. Our memory works like compressed computer images, storing key attributes while reconstructing details later, often incorrectly. These false memories become reinforced each time we recall them as we begin remembering the memory rather than the original event. We humans have social and emotional connections that transcend words and are communicated without conscious thought. Social connection is so fundamental that when we're deprived of it, we suffer both emotionally and physically. Brain imaging studies reveal that social pain activates the same brain structure, anterior cingulate cortex, involved in physical pain, explaining why Tylenol can actually reduce the sting of social rejection, as demonstrated in experiments with virtual ball-tossing games. The connection between social and physical pain illustrates why social isolation constitutes a major health risk factor, rivaling even cigarette smoking and obesity. In one 9-year study, socially isolated individuals were twice as likely to die as their well-connected counterparts, regardless of other risk factors. Some scientists believe our need for social interaction drove human intelligence evolution. Rather than abstract reasoning being our primary evolutionary advantage, our social intelligence, particularly our theory of mind, TOM, distinguishes us from other species. This ability to understand others' thoughts and feelings enables our complex social cooperation. Archaeological evidence shows that around 50,000 years ago, humans suddenly developed cooperative hunting, shelter building, and cultural rituals, possibly due to a software upgrade in our brains that enhanced social capabilities. Our TOM ability develops early in humans. By age 4, nearly all children can assess others' mental states. When TOM breaks down, as in autism, social functioning becomes difficult. Humans commonly engage in third and fourth order intentionality, understanding what someone thinks about another's thoughts, while non-human primates operate between first and second order. This advanced TOM capability correlates with brain structure, specifically the size of a species' neocortex relative to its whole brain corresponds to the typical size of its social groups. When this mathematical relationship is applied to humans, it predicts social networks of about 150 people, precisely what we observe in Aboriginal clans, military units, and Christmas card lists. This cognitive limit exists because maintaining meaningful relationships requires tracking complex social information about each person. Despite this natural limit, humans have created organizational structures and communication technologies that enable thousands to work together on massive projects. Stanley Milgram's famous 6 degrees of separation experiments demonstrated our remarkable interconnectedness, showing that most people are connected through just 5 to 7 intermediaries. While human social behavior is vastly more complex than other mammals, we share fundamental neural mechanisms with them. Mammalian social behavior is heavily influenced by brain chemistry. Studies of oxytocin show that when players demonstrate trust in economic games, their partners' brains release oxytocin in response. Even more striking, a gene governing vasopressin receptors affects social bonding. Men with fewer receptors are twice as likely to experience marital problems as men with more receptors. In 1904, a horse named Clever Hans captivated Germany with his apparent ability to perform arithmetic and intellectual tasks by tapping his hoof. Despite a Prussian education commission concluding no trickery was involved, psychologist Oscar Fungst discovered the truth. Hans was responding to unconscious, minimal body movements from questioners who knew the answers. When the correct number was reached, questioners would imperceptibly shift posture, signaling Hans to stop tapping. This phenomenon reveals how we unconsciously communicate through nonverbal cues. Our gestures, body positions, facial expressions, and speech qualities often reveal our true thoughts despite our carefully chosen words. Animals, particularly dogs, have evolved remarkable sensitivity to these human signals, even outperforming primates in reading human social cues. Even when explicitly instructed to treat subjects equally, experimenters unconsciously communicate their expectations. Robert Rosenthal demonstrated this with schoolchildren. Teachers told certain average-scoring students were gifted, subsequently rated these children as more curious and interested. 8 months later, these falsely labeled gifted children showed remarkable IQ gains, with 80% improving by at least 10 points and 20% gaining 30-plus points, powerful evidence of how expectations shape performance. Charles Darwin made groundbreaking observations about nonverbal communication in his 1872 work, The Expression of the Emotions in Man and Animals. Through meticulous cross-species observation, Darwin concluded that many emotional expressions provide evolutionary advantages and aren't unique to humans. He documented how expressions like smiles have deep primate roots. In monkeys and chimps, bared teeth function as peace signals during potentially threatening eye contact, explaining why we instinctively smile when meeting strangers' gazes. While anyone can consciously fake a smile using the zygomatic major muscles that pull mouth corners upward, genuine smiles also involve the involuntary contraction of orbicularis oculi muscles around the eyes, creating subtle crow's feet. This capability starts at birth. Even congenitally blind children who've never seen expressions make the same facial movements as sighted children, proving our catalog of expressions is largely innate. Humans participate in elaborate nonverbal exchanges without conscious awareness. Dominance hierarchies are signaled through gaze patterns. The visual dominance ratio, the percentage of time looking at someone while speaking divided by the percentage while listening, precisely reflects social hierarchy. People with higher status maintain ratios near or above 1.0, while subordinates average around 0.6. Despite living in crowded cities, humans navigate complex social spaces without explicit instructions. We unconsciously maintain appropriate interpersonal distances, which vary by culture, take turns in conversation using subtle cues like lowered volume and stretched final words, and read each other's body language with remarkable precision. Children's social success correlates strongly with their ability to read nonverbal cues. Studies of kindergartners show that popular children excel at identifying emotions in photographs. Our unconscious minds judge others automatically based on nonverbal cues, often applying stereotypes and social norms, even when our conscious minds would deem such reactions inappropriate. Stanford professor Clifford Nass demonstrated how deeply ingrained our social responses are by showing that students unconsciously applied human social norms and gender stereotypes to computers. Students rated female-voiced computers as more knowledgeable about relationships than identical male-voiced computers, found forceful male computers more likable than forceful female ones, and were reluctant to criticize computers to their face despite consciously knowing they were just machines. Voice plays a crucial evolutionary role in human attraction. Women consistently find men with deeper voices more attractive, associating them with desirable physical traits like height and muscularity. Men unconsciously adjust their voice pitch based on perceived dominance hierarchies, lowering their voices when feeling physically dominant and raising them when feeling subordinate. Most tellingly, a woman's attraction to low-pitched male voices peaks during her fertile phase, while men find women's voices most attractive during this same period. The way we speak communicates far more than our words alone. Research using electronically altered speech shows that higher-pitched voices are judged less truthful, less emphatic, and more nervous than lower-pitched ones. Faster speakers are perceived as more truthful, persuasive, and active. This power of voice is so significant that Margaret Thatcher deliberately lowered her pitch to increase her social dominance before becoming British Prime Minister. Touch creates powerful subliminal connections between people. In a French experiment, men who briefly touched women's forearms while asking for phone numbers doubled their success rate from 10% to 20%. Similar studies show that servers who lightly touch diners receive higher tips, and touched customers are more likely to order suggested items. Touch increases compliance across various scenarios, from accepting dance invitations to volunteering for tasks to helping strangers. Most remarkably, the majority of people don't even consciously register being touched. Our bodies contain specialized nerve fibers that seem evolutionarily designed specifically to transmit the pleasantness of social touch, connecting directly to emotional centers in the brain. This reflects our primate heritage, where grooming serves primarily as social bonding rather than hygiene. The 1960 presidential debate between Kennedy and Nixon dramatically illustrates the power of appearance. Kennedy arrived looking rested and bronzed, while Nixon appeared haggard and pale from a recent illness. Radio listeners thought Nixon won by a 2-to-1 margin, while television viewers favored Kennedy, with Nixon ultimately losing the election by just 113,000 votes, less than 1 in 500, the visual impression from the debate likely cost him the presidency. Our brains use categorization as an essential cognitive strategy to efficiently process information. Without categorization, we would be overwhelmed by having to treat every visual input as a completely separate element requiring fresh analysis. Research shows we have specialized neurons in our prefrontal cortex that respond to categories, which is why we remember lists better when items are organized by category rather than randomly presented. Every object and person we encounter is unique, but we wouldn't function well perceiving them that way. We lack the mental bandwidth to observe every detail in our environment, so we assign objects to categories based on a few salient traits. This expedites our reactions. We don't need to analyze each bear we meet after seeing one eat Uncle Bob. Categorization helps us navigate our environment efficiently, understanding an object's significance first and its individuality later. While categorization is a crucial mental shortcut, it creates distortions. When we categorize, we polarize. Things in the same category seem more similar than they really are, while those in different categories appear more different. Early experiments showed that when lines were grouped into two sets, subjects perceived lines within each group as closer in length than they actually were. The term stereotype was coined in 1794 by French printer Firmin Didot, referring to duplicate metal plates for mass printing. Walter Lippmann first used it in its current sense in 1922, recognizing that stereotypes come from cultural exposure. We categorize people by profession, appearance, ethnicity, education, and countless other attributes. Experiments show how powerfully these categories affect perception. In one study, bystanders were significantly more likely to report shoplifting when committed by an unkempt person than by a well-dressed individual. The Implicit Association Test, IAT, developed in 1998, revolutionized how we measure unconscious bias. The test measures response times when sorting words into categories, revealing that we respond faster when tasks align with our mental associations. Results show roughly half of people unconsciously associate men with science and women with arts, and 70% exhibit pro-white bias, even many black people themselves. These biases operate automatically through the ventromedial prefrontal cortex, regardless of our conscious beliefs. Categorization isn't inherently evil. It helps us navigate social interactions efficiently. The real challenge isn't stopping categorization, but becoming aware of when it prevents us from seeing individuals. We can fight unconscious bias through conscious effort. Research shows that our tendency to categorize can be influenced by our goals. Personal knowledge of specific individuals can override category bias, and repeated contact with category members can counteract negative stereotypes. Human beings naturally form bands and develop strong us versus them mentalities. The Robbers Cave experiment of the 1950s demonstrated this when researchers secretly studied two isolated groups of carefully selected 11-year-old boys at summer camp. Initially kept separate, each group formed its own identity with names, the Rattlers and Eagles, flags, and unique norms. When introduced to each other through competitive activities, they quickly developed hostility, leading to flag burning, raids, and physical confrontations. Our tendency to form in-groups and out-groups evolved from prehistoric survival needs. Long before modern ideologies, neighboring human groups fought over scarce resources like food and water. Within bands, humans formed alliances and coalitions where group dynamics determined who thrived. The ability to detect political allegiances wasn't just workplace politics, it was life or death. We all belong to multiple in-groups, and our self-identification shifts depending on context, identifying variously as a woman, executive, nationality, or parent. These affiliations form crucial components of our self-image, with people making significant financial sacrifices to belong to prestigious groups like exclusive country clubs. Once we identify with a group, its views, called group norms, infiltrate our thinking and perception. Muzaffar Sharif demonstrated this by showing subjects a stationary illuminated dot that appeared to move. When three people viewed it together and called out perceived movement distances, their initially different estimates would converge to a group norm without discussion. A week later, individuals tested alone maintained their group's perception, showing how deeply in-group perceptions become our own reality. Seeing ourselves as part of a group automatically divides the world into us and them. We have a special affinity for our in-group members, whether they're family, colleagues, or broader social categories. Studies show we rate members of our own profession as more likable than others, except lawyers who regularly oppose fellow lawyers. We favor in-group members in social and business dealings, evaluate their work more positively, and perceive them as more varied and complex than out-group members. The requirements for feeling kinship with an in-group are remarkably minimal. In Tajfel's experiments, subjects arbitrarily assigned to meaningless groups, clique and Dinsky fans or dot estimators, showed strong favoritism toward their own group. When doling out points convertible to money, subjects consistently chose to maximize the difference between in-group and out-group rewards, even when this meant giving fewer total points to their own group members. Yet discrimination isn't inevitable. Sheriff's Robbers Cave experiment showed that when eagles and rattlers worked together to solve common problems, like fixing the camp water supply, intergroup conflict dramatically decreased. Similarly, New Yorkers of all backgrounds united as a single community after the 9/11 attacks, demonstrating how shared challenges can dissolve social divisions. Our emotional states are far more fluid and mysterious than we typically acknowledge. While we often think of ourselves as having fixed personality traits and consistent behaviors, our identities shift constantly based on circumstances, social environments, and even hormonal changes. We can simultaneously hold conflicting feelings, like the conscious rejection of prejudice alongside unconscious biases. The sources of our feelings often remain hidden from our conscious awareness. Traditional psychology assumed we could access our true feelings through introspection, but many of our innermost feelings resist even the most profound self-examination. As one neuroscientist explained, the stories we construct in therapy about our motivations may satisfy us, but likely aren't true. The real truth lies in brain structures like the thalamus, hypothalamus, and amygdala that operate beyond conscious access. The dominant view of emotion today traces back to William James, who argued that bodily changes don't follow emotions. Rather, emotions are our awareness of these bodily changes. We don't tremble because we're angry. We feel angry because we tremble. In today's neo-Jamesian view, emotions are reconstructed from physiological responses, unconscious processing of environmental stimuli, and contextual information. If emotions are constructed rather than directly perceived, then emotional illusions should exist. Situations where we misattribute physiological arousal to incorrect emotional causes. The Bridge experiment demonstrated this perfectly. Men interviewed on a terrifying, swaying bridge with a 230-foot drop were significantly more likely to call an attractive female interviewer afterward than those on a stable bridge, mistaking fear-based arousal for attraction. We often don't understand our feelings, yet confidently provide explanations for them. In experiments, subjects shown pairs of photos would choose one face as more attractive, but when researchers secretly gave them the rejected photo instead, 75% didn't notice and confidently explained why they preferred the face they had actually rejected. This confabulation occurs because our left brain constantly seeks order, inventing explanations rather than performing true introspection. We make decisions, like impulsively buying an expensive rug, without understanding why, then rationalize them afterward. Rather than seeing this as a flaw, we can appreciate how our unconscious mind provides the support we need as we navigate life's complexities. Our brains aren't designed for perfect self-knowledge, but for survival and social functioning, and in that, they excel. Our brains are designed not for accurate self-understanding, but for survival. we consistently overestimate our abilities and virtues, from FEMA Director Michael Brown blaming others for Hurricane Katrina response failures to O.J. Simpson claiming he'd done nothing wrong even when facing prison time. This self-serving bias extends to notorious criminals like Dutch Schultz and Al Capone, who saw themselves as public benefactors despite their violent crimes. Most people dramatically overrate their abilities. In surveys, 100% of high school seniors rated themselves as at least average in social skills, with 60% placing themselves in the top 10%. Similarly, 94% of college professors believe they do above-average work. This above-average effect appears across domains. Engineers, military officers, doctors, and business executives all dramatically overestimate their competence. Physicians diagnosing pneumonia reported 88% confidence, but were correct only 20% of the time. Our ego fiercely defends its honor through self-deception. Unlike earlier psychological theories that viewed well-adjusted people as objective self-scientists, modern research shows healthy individuals routinely think of themselves as more competent than they actually are. As psychologist Jonathan Haidt explains, the human mind operates both as a scientist seeking objective truth and as an attorney advocating for what we want to believe. Our brain functions as a decent scientist but an outstanding lawyer. In constructing our self-image, the passionate advocate usually defeats the truth-seeker. The unconscious mind masterfully blends fact and illusion, creating a Picasso-esque self-portrait that exaggerates strengths while minimizing weaknesses. Psychologists call this motivated reasoning, a process that helps us feel competent, in control, and see ourselves in an overly positive light. For motivated reasoning to be effective, it must maintain an illusion of objectivity. Our unconscious employs selective standards of evidence, applying lenient standards to information supporting our desired worldview while demanding rigorous proof for contradictory data. Studies show people readily accept vague news reports that confirm their beliefs while rejecting overwhelming scientific consensus on issues like climate change when it contradicts their preferences. Beyond selectively accepting evidence, our subliminal mind employs other motivated reasoning tools, adjusting the importance of evidence and sometimes ignoring unfavorable information entirely. If we're better at grammar than arithmetic, we give linguistic knowledge more weight in our view of what's important. We even recruit our memories to brighten our self-image. College students recalled their high school grades with 89% accuracy for A's, but only 29% accuracy for D's. This reality distortion field, exemplified by Steve Jobs and countless others who believe in themselves against evidence, serves a crucial psychological purpose. Studies show that positive self-illusions make us more cooperative, better problem solvers, more motivated, and more persistent when facing challenges. The most accurate self-perceptions correlate with depression and low self-esteem, while unrealistic optimism helps us overcome seemingly insurmountable obstacles. As the author's mother learned to sew overnight to secure a job despite having no experience, we choose the facts we want to believe, and often what actually happens depends largely upon which theory of ourselves we choose to embrace. Our unconscious isn't just shaping our perception of the world, it's creating the very self that experiences it.